Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM and the IC2300H. For more information and a chance to win, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Over.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 61, August 22nd, 2012. The Huntsville Ham Fest. Hello, everybody, and good evening. It's Ham Nation time. You don't have to adjust your equalizers, your audio. I have some kind of hoarse throat, but I'm okay. It's probably from talking a lot in Huntsville. We had such a great time, and sorry you couldn't be there if you weren't, but we'll make it through here. And I wanted to thank everybody that did the great stellar work to put that Ham Fest on. It was really good. Gordo, you missed a good one. We got to have you there next year. How are you doing in Costa Mesa?
Oh, we're doing fine. We have Julian here rolling the controls, and we did see you on the KUV site, and you were all standing tall in Huntsville.
We had a good time. George, did you make it back okay?
Made it back fine, Bob. We got back Sunday evening. We stayed, within about 30 minutes to the end of the Ham Fest there. Wasn't quite as busy on Sunday, but, you know, that's usually what you expect the second day. Won't have as many folks, but, boy, the first day sure was crowded.
It felt like Dayton. It really did for a little bit. The crowd around us, not the whole thing, but just seemed like the crowd around us. But I think a lot of it was because of Ham Nation. We had so many people that came up and talked to George and Don and I about watching the show. So we're really, really happy that we're helping so many. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But Gordon, we've got a really cool guest tonight. And it's a guy that has an awful lot to do with keeping Ham Nation going afterwards. And it's our friend Mike from the garlic capital of the world, Gilroy. So let's see if we can bring Mike in. Mike, how are you doing? WT6H, are you doing okay up there?
Hello, Bob, and everyone on Ham Nation. Thanks for having me on. And hello to everyone, all of you who check in on 7268. I've got some garlic here that I picked up. Hopefully we'll improve my signal tonight. And thanks for having me on, guys. I really love what I'm doing with the net, and look forward to doing tonight's net. It'll be very special.
Gordo, you got something to talk back with him. You've got your own garlic, right?
Yeah, we do. We have our own garlic here, courtesy of Mike. Julian's going to be on HF. In fact, we're going to bring Mike in about 30 seconds before we sign off tonight. So it'll be a fun show, and we hope everybody will tune in after Ham Nation is finished.
Yeah, it's just so great to have you here, Mike. And we thank you so much for taking your time, because sometimes those nets go for 2, 3, 4 hours. So thanks very much for doing this. Tell us a little bit about how you got into ham radio and also a little bit about your station, Mike.
Okay. Well, I started off with interest in ham radio when I was young, but didn't get licensed until a few years ago in 2010. And I realized that it didn't require having to take the code test. And tried taking the test online, you know, doing the practice test. And found I could pass the technician's test without even studying. But picked up one of Gordo's books for the general class. And away I went with studying. And I think I slept with that book for about a month. And I went down and took the test. And I became a general in January of 2010.
That's great. Well, you had great help with Gordon's book, of course. We know that. And it was so good to see you at Dayton this year. I'm glad you made that trip. I know it was a big deal. And what do you do during the day? What kind of work are you in?
Well, I'm a union sheet metal worker by trade, and I've been doing that now for almost 20 years, and specializing in air conditioning and heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So right now we're working on schools. School's getting ready to start, and so it's a big crunch time now as all the kids and the teachers need their air conditioning.
Hey, Gordo, we can go to him that we need to build a chassis or something. What do you think?
I think he should. Right on camera, Bob. Go ahead.
Smoke and solder. We're going to have a bend in shape. Let's see a picture. I think we got a picture of you when you were at Dayton with us. That was really a nice picture that was taken. See if Alex can bring up that picture of us. Look at that. And
you know, I had such a fun time out there in Dayton with you guys, and it was kind of last minute thing, and ended up finding tickets and finding a place to stay. And I really wasn't sure what I was going to do that was going to make it out there, was going to be sleeping there, sleeping in a rental car, but I was able to make it. And I tell you, it's was so much more than I could ever have expected to see out there. Had a great time with you guys at the Ham Nation booth.
Well, we appreciate you being there. Tell us a little bit about your station. You have a huge signal out here. And tell us a little bit about what you're doing station-wise.
Okay, well, I'll give you the reason for the huge signal in a moment here. But let me go into my rig is a FT897. And I am driving an Ameritron AL80A, the old Ameritron with the 3500Z, and using a Heil HM12 microphone. So very modest setup here. And that's all going into up the tower there. The tower is a Force 12 aluminum telescoping crank-up tower. It's a low-profile tower, and it goes up to 52 feet. On top of that, I have a hex beam, six-band K4 KIO hex beam, and I have modified the hex beam. I've added 40 meters to it with a 40-meter wire dipole that's on two fishing poles back-to-back and slightly longer than the fishing pole, so it droops down off the end about 13 feet. It's called an inverted U, and that's at 55 feet. On top of that, I have the Elk 2-meter 440 at 60 feet, and that all rotates up there. Down below, you see the inverted V. That's for 75. And I've got some extensions on there. I can also operate 160. I was able to wrap it back around underneath the eave of the house. And in the foreground is the Diamond X510. They're the collinear 2-meter 440 there for working the repeaters.
That is great, and I'm really impressed. You haven't been on the air long. You've been licensed a couple of years, and for all of the audience, you want to take note here. These are things that they do when they first get started, and I disagree with you when you say you have a modest station. It really plays, and that's what counts. How about that antenna, Gordon? Did you check out the fishing poles? What do you think?
I did. Some great additions, and that's the same antenna. Not quite as elaborate as that we used at Quartzfest, and boy, it really talks.
And there again, guys, it's not about the elaborate setup. It's what works. And my congratulations to you on getting that all going, Mike. And we appreciate you taking all of your time, as we said. And you're usually on, 7268? Also then sometimes you get on 20. But most of the time you run the 40-meter net, right?
That is correct. And we've been on 7268 here for about the last 20 weeks. Started out doing the net around episode 13. And with Bill, K5LN, and also Jim, K0JAM up in North Dakota, kind of reeled me into it and said, geez, Mikey, you have such a loud signal from the West Coast. Can you run the net? Will you run the net on 40? And I accepted that. But I've been running on 7268, been running strong on there. And I'd like to say a big hello to all of you that check in every week on 7268. And I'm looking forward to hearing you guys tonight. We run the net. It comes on right after the show, and I try to go 2 hours. I have a roster, a call list that I will call from. And if you'd like to be added to that call list, you can send an email to me there at the call sign below. Just ask to be added to the 40-meter call list. And after that, then I go and I call by call number, so the number of your call sign, and then we'll kind of have like an open last call at the end there. And I try not to go beyond 2 hours. As Al there, K1 LTJ on the East Coast there in Danbury, Connecticut, it's midnight for him. And I feel for him and Dale there, K0HYD, helping out with assisting in check-ins. The other thing is that my big signal, I know a lot of people wonder, and it's not just the antenna there. And I've got the garlic here. I think I saved this for last.
That's great.
So there you go. That's what really gets the signal out.
Oh, I can smell great.
This thing really reeks, I tell you.
Well, for all of you listening on the podcast, you have to go back and watch the video of Mike and his garlic. Well, Mike, we really appreciate you being here tonight, and we'll get on right after the net. I hope everybody on the that's watching Ham Nation or listening to us tonight, join us on 7268. We'll hope we can make a good contact, and I know you'll have plenty of check-ins. So thanks very much for being here. And thanks for supporting Ham Nation after the net. And we'll be looking for you after a while. 7-3 to you, Mike.
Thanks, Bob. 7-3 to you. And I love the show. Love Ham Nation. As I've told everybody, and I'll say it again, I'll keep doing the net. It's fun. As long as it's fun, I'm going to keep doing it. When it stops becoming fun, which I don't think will ever happen, that's when I'll stop doing the net. So thanks, everyone, for having me on. 7-3 to all of you out there, and I'll be listening on 7268 after the show.
All right, that's great. We're so appreciative of everybody that takes part in all the nets. So we had Bill on that does a 20-meter net, and we'll continue to have some of the others on. Huntsville, I had Cutshaw come up. Ron Cutshaw brought me this. Check it out. I got my own DV dongle. How you like that? So now we just got to figure out how to hook it up and make it work. But Larry Johnston, the bass player for a 38 special, told me about this when it first came up. And he said, you got to get one of these. So Ron brought this by the booth. We're going to get this on and give you some reports. So we'll be able to get on the D-Star net. What do you think, Gordo? You think we can make that?
Oh, I think that's going to be great. And I know everybody on the D-Star net will love having you on board.
All right. Well, you've got some interesting things in your what we call short shots. Let's see what you got going, Gordo.
Okay. By the way, Don, KE6BXT, reminds everyone, this is the DATV, Digital Amateur Television Weekend, down in Australia. They're going to be beaming it up here on ATV. So if you've got an ATV repeater that is in your area, you may want to check it out this weekend. And if you'd like to just look at it on your own computer, go to Don's webpage, KE6BXT.com/DATV QSO party. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, last week we had several folks say general class, and you heard Mike earlier talking about general class. We think when we say general class, we're talking about the general class ham radio license. But, you know, there's another type of general out there that a lot of folks have heard about, and it's called the general radio telephone operator's license. So when someone says they have the general, one has to say, is that the commercial? Now, for those of you that have your amateur radio extra class license, you are right next door to passing the commercial general test. And Alex, if you'll roll the videos, the GROL allows you to go aboard party boats that carry passengers for hire. And with a simple watt meter be able to double check and do an inspection of their power output. This modified MFJ deviation meter allows me to double check that the marine radio is working. You can make money as a commercial general op by checking out EPIRBs, like you see right here, again, aboard those commercial boats. And if it's a big, tall ship like this that carries kids out for a day cruise, they have to have a marine radio operator's permit operator on board. You could be that radio person. Remember, if we work on marine radios or aeronautical radios, as we see right here on the bench, you need the commercial general radio telephone license. And it's just like the extra class test. In fact, half the questions are extra class. Even VHF marine radios require the commercial GROL license. It's a 100 question test. It's not that difficult to pass the test. And if you have the extra class and you pass that test, you're very close to obtaining the GROL commercial examination. And just log on to my Gordo website or send me an email, and I'll be happy to give you more information about studying up and actually making some money, not in the ham side, but in the commercial GROL. Used to be the old first class. So hopefully that clears up about the general versus the general radio telephone commercial license. And we hope everybody has a good upgrade. So, Bob, that's the latest at this end. And I can't wait to see what's going to happen on video from your and all the gang's trip to Huntsville. Back to you, Bob.
All right, Gordo. One thing, too, a lot of guys would think, well, we're not close to the ocean. But here we are in north of Springfield, Missouri, a few miles. And there's a huge lake. Well, there's a lot of lakes here, Fellows Lake, Stockton Lake. And I was up with Sarah's cousin a few weeks ago. He's got a 40-foot yacht on that lake, sailboat. And I was amazed at the number of guys that were working on radios. There were two guys there that they have a radio company. And it's in the middle of Missouri, in the middle of the USA. So I guess you guys, you're needed everywhere, aren't you?
Yeah, that's true, Bob. Inland lakes as well. And anywhere where the Coast Guard has jurisdiction, they many times inspect those party boats just to make sure that a marine radio operator permit operator is aboard and that the equipment has been certified and tested by a GROL, commercial general radio telephone operator. And again, if you've got the extra, heck, take that 100-question exam, pass it with 74% or better, and you'll be able to work on marine as well as aviation radios.
There we go. Making ham radio your great hobby, a part of your life and your livelihood. That's wonderful. Well, yeah, we had a great time in Huntsville, and George and Don were taking a lot of video. So we want to bring George in with his video. George, it goes without saying, we had a wonderful time there, and want to see some of your video.
Okay, Bob. Yeah, it was great to meet up with you again out at Huntsville and spend some time together meeting fans and those who didn't know about the show learned about it for the first time. But I turned on the camera as soon as I got there, and here's what I saw.
The first thing you notice as you approach the Von Braun Center is W1AW/4 Special Event Station, which was being hosted in the NICE Alabama Emergency Incident Unit. Once I got into the Huntsville Hamfest and turned around and had a look at the door, I knew I must be in for a good time, evidenced by the crowds being backed up to the outside. The first thing you noticed once you stepped into the exhibit hall was the large Gigaparts booth. They brought the whole store to the Hamfest, including displays by many of their top vendors. When I turned to my right, there was Tom Medlin, W5KUB, with his live stream from the Hamfest. When I turned to my left, there were the flea market tables, and a lot of them with a lot of good old gear and parts that I spent a little time shopping in myself. Yaesu brought their quality line of amateur radio products to the show and were set up right in front of the Gigaparts booth. Of course, ICOM was right there too, demonstrating their full line. And the other member of the top three Japanese radio manufacturers was there as well. Kenwood. Elenco, among other products, was showing their new EasyScan digital scanning receiver. Of the American radio manufacturers, we had Tentec with their products, as well as Elecraft showing their latest. I also had an opportunity to talk with the people at Flex Radio about the newest Flex 6000 that'll be out soon. We also got our first look at the new Oshon dual-band mobile transceiver. Of course, CQ Magazine was on hand to cover the event, and Ted Randall broadcasts his weekly shortwave program from the site. Of course, when we're talking about ham radio, it's not just radios. We need antennas, too. And Spiderbeam was there displaying their great line. And for the first time ever at the Huntsville Ham Fest, Stepper was there showing their mechanically tuned antennas. And, of course, Diamond was there showing their full line of antenna products. L&R Precision showed their PAR InFed antennas. And Texas Antennas was there with a great line of log periodic and beam antennas. Radio Works showed their wire antennas as well as other antenna accessories. Tenodyne was on hand displaying their Cubex quad antennas. Transworld Antennas was there displaying their unique portable antennas. And a big name in screwdriver antennas, Tar Heel Antennas, was there showing their colorful line. Tar Heel also had another device that really caught my eye. That was this motorized antenna tilt-down mount, perfect for driving in the garage. Of course, we need cable to connect these antennas with. Times Microwave System was there showing their line of LMR cable. And probably one of the most recognized wire dealers, the Wireman, was there with a great selection. Of course, these antennas have to be put in the air, and U.S. Tower was there showing their solutions. Sometimes you want just a little more power. And Alpha Amplifier was there showing their great line of amplifiers, as well as Expert Amps USA showing their nice solid-state amps. And, of course, Ameritron was there with MFJ and Cushcraft, Mirage, and their other lines. There were plenty of full-line ham dealers there, including Gigaparts, Ham World, Hub City Amateur Radio Sales, Ham Radio Outlet, WB0W, VIS with their trailer, and DCA Selectronics. And there are likely other dealers there that I did not get footage of. Much of ham radio today involves computers, and software companies were on hand. W4PC with Ham Radio Deluxe showed the most recent version. RemoteShack.com demonstrated their line of remote access products for amateur radio. And RT Systems showed their solution for programming amateur radios. At the other end of the spectrum was Vibraplex showing their Morse code keys. As with most HamFests, there were a number of groups and associations present. The Boy Scouts of America, the American Radio Relay League, the Alabama QSO Party, and North Alabama DX Club, the QRP Amateur Radio Club, AMSAT, OMIS, which is the Old Man International Sideband Society, the New York City Junior High School Radio Club, Army Mars, and 1010 International Net. There were other vendors there who weren't necessarily amateur radio related, like Select Computer Resources, who had a wide range of used notebook computers. There were clothing items, hats and caps. There was even a company there who would custom wind transformers for you for that old gear. Hamplex.com and GiftsForHams.com was there, showing a nice selection of gifts perfect for that ham radio operator. One vendor that really caught my eye was Mad Scientist Supply, with their wide range of Arduino kits, semiconductors, switching power supplies, motors, relays, all type of components, and a large selection of LEDs, almost every kind imaginable. You could also find tools
including this $40 air compressor, which looked like a real nice value. And if you needed a battery for your handy talkie, well, Batteries America was there with all types. And the conductor was standing by at Hambook Express, and the sign man was there selling those Ham Nation fan badges that are becoming so fashionable. So a great time there at the Huntsville Ham Fest. And Bob, I know that you took some photos while you were there of some of the gear I didn't cover.
I did. Of course, you know how I feel about all of this old stuff behind me. By the way, I got the Harvey Wells on the air today. Check it out. I made a contact today with the AM bunch with my Mosley receiver. And next week, I think, is going to start the week. We're going to explain what you do with one of these things and how to hook up a bunch of old things like a transmitter and a receiver and all that. So we're looking forward to starting some of that. I had a ton of people at Huntsville corner me and say, when are you going to show us how to hook up all that old gear? So we're going to start doing that. But yeah, I got to meet up with Rick and the guy that makes the badges. You want to Rick the sign man. That's all you need to do and get a hold of him and he'll get you one of the badges. Let's see some of these pictures. I did stills and we'll talk a little bit about some of them. And the first one is Patrick and Robin, who are the owners of Gigaparts. These guys did a stellar job. They did something very different. They brought their whole store there and lined the whole place with vendors. It was great. We'll go into the flea market, and guess what we see first? Radios, old radios. I hope the podcasters that are listening can go see some of the video. Every kind of old radio that your grandma and grandpa listen to. And stuff like this, beautiful stuff. Here's a radio that you could have probably walked out of there for about $350, the great 520 Kenwood. It had the microphone and the whole bit. And there was a Courier amplifier. Now, this is a dandy little amplifier. I've had a couple of these through my ham radio career. They work just so good. Put out about 800, 900 watts. Great little amplifier, $300. And the Hammerlin HQ129X, not very long ago, Chris, who's a brand new ham in St. Louis, he got his, I think it was his dad's HQ129X. So there's a wonderful old receiver that works so well. But you have to have tubes to run all this stuff. And that's sometimes the problem. Not a problem at Hamfest. Tubes galore. We have big tubes, bigger tubes. That's the 833 tubes that are in the sign that Jim's engraving made for me. And we've got a bunch of other old transmitting tubes. Here's the new one, the 3-500s. That's in many of your present-day amplifiers, and it's just become a vulnerable transmitting tube. That little puppy will put out 500 or 600 watts. There's another manufacturer of a 3-500, and they really work well. And all of this is available at these ham fests. And look at that. You want a coax switch? There you go. Many of the B&W, which is a marvelous switch. Look at all the different kinds that they made. Some came out the sides. I like the one that comes out the back. And just wonderful things. Neil, K6SMF, a great friend that I talked to on 20 meters as he roams around the country. He had some of these there. He had a lot of other things, too. And look at this. This is a 90-year-old guy had built this, and I think his name is Steve, had the hat, and it wasn't for sale. But he was just messing around with some coax connectors and made a little beam out of some wire and put it on top of a hard hat. Fun times. Now, check this out. This is a CW key that was clamped to my leg. This is so when you drive your car, you can operate CW. But, of course, that was for Airpine. This is one of the great fans of Ham Nation. Arnie's from Sweden and got his license because of Ham Nation. And, of course, Arnie was all over us about what's going on with Ham Nation. We love the fans. the next slide. I think we got one of his bad. Yeah, there it is. There it is. He has two stations, one in Sweden and one in Mississippi. So we really enjoyed the fans. But one of my real fun things was seeing John, WB4QDA, John and his lovely wife. We talked to him on 75 meters. I've talked to him for years. Never met him. Got to meet him and his wife. So I thank John for coming by and seeing us. And those are the kind of things that ham radio does for us. Those wonderful relationships that you build, but you don't ever see them sometimes. So when you do get to see them, it's a real treasure. So take in some of these ham fests. This weekend, I'm going to be at Joplin. Hope to have my voice back by then. But we have a lot of fun, and I'm happy that I was able to make Huntsville this year. I think we got a word from W6TWT, so let's go see what's going on in Petaluma.
Hello, you hams! Hey, Gordo. Hey, George. Is Bob back? Yes. Yes. Oh, there you are. I didn't see you, Bob. He's kind of short. So I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about these ICOM radios. You know I'm an ICOM fan. That's the only kind of radio I use here in the beautiful Tootbrick House. That's because that Ray Novak guy set us up with so many great radios. That I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the update to one of the most popular radios ICOM's ever done, the IC2200. Remember that? Great little mobile radio. Beautiful. They've got the new 2300H, compact, rugged. It's even a little bit smaller than the 2200. 65 stable watts. It's a FM receiver, transceiver, I guess you'd call it, 2 meter FM mobile. Output power selectable in four steps from 65 watts down to 5 watts. It's an aluminum die-cast chassis. That's mil-spec, baby. We're talking this thing can handle shock, vibration, extremes of temperature. Really great. Look, I love this. It can configure the backlight to amber, yellow, or green, as they say, for your visual enjoyment. 207 memory channels. That should do you. 200 regular channels, 6 scan edges, and a call channel. And each channel name programmable with 6 characters, so it's easy to find what you're looking for. Tones for quiet, standby, and repeater access using CTCSS and DTCS. Tone scan function detecting subaudible tones. That's good for repeater access. You got your pocket beep function. I think every radio should have this. It indicates an incoming call both audibly and visually. The pocket beep. 4.5 watts. You know, one of the things ICOM does really well is nice, clear, loud audio. I like that. This is a nice radio, 4.5 watts of loud audio, bright LCD that's configurable, as I mentioned. You want to know more? Visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. You don't have to do the ch. ICOM. You can if you want. It's spelled ham, H-A-M, nation. ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation for more information on the IC2300H, their brand new mobile receiver. Oh, and don't forget to register for ICOM's weekly drawing. Congratulations. Wait a minute, let's go. I'm going to go there because we got some winners already. ICOMAmerica/hamnation. You can register right here for the regular drawings on Ham Nation. And there's some little, you know, just a little questionnaire. What's your favorite part? What ICOM products, reviews, or services would you like featured in additional comments? And let's go see who last week's winners are. Look at these guys. Look at that. Last week, we got three. Is that, they gave away 3 IC7000s to KC9PWF, KJ1U, and K0GGC. Congratulations, David, Kelly, and Greg, our winners from last week. We'll do another drawing, another great trio of winners. Make sure you go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. That's great. I love that. Almost as much as I love smoke and solder. Let's get back to George and Gordo and Bob. All yours, guys.
Leo, we have to build that smoke up a little bit, but it's coming next segment. But first of all, we're gonna find out a little bit about the news. But thanks very much, Leo. It's really great to have you on for ICOM, and we appreciate ICOM being here to support Ham Nation. So now we're going to hear about what happened around the world in amateur radio while we were off looking at old radios in good old Huntsville. Don, take her away. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks. It was great hanging out with you and spending a little time with you over in Alabama this weekend. Let's check and see what's going on. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1827, here are your Ham Nation headlines for today, Wednesday, August 22nd, 2012. The Philippine Amateur Radio Association activated its ham emergency radio operations on 2 meters and 40 meters passing essential traffic during the widespread flooding that recently hit the capital city of Manila and surrounding areas. Nearly 2 weeks of monsoon rains across the Philippines' main island of Luzon peaked with a 48-hour deluge that battered Manila and surrounding regions August 6th and 7th. This was the worst rain to hit Manila since Tropical Storm Ketsana killed 464 people in 2009. Members of the Ham Emergency Radio Operations Group were on air from Monday the 6th through Thursday the 9th as floodwaters rose and then receded. The ham radio community had been warned of the pending rains through the PARA website. They asked radio amateurs involved in emergency communications to be prepared by monitoring 7.095 and 144.740 megahertz, the emergency frequencies. And according to news reports, 66 people lost their lives in the torrential rain, and officials estimated 300,000 fled their homes in the capital city of Manila. The Coast Guard, with the aid of amateur radio, coordinated the rescue of a mariner in distress approximately 7 miles northeast of Hilo, Hawaii, Friday, August 10th. Duty officers at Joint Rescue Coordination Center in Honolulu received an email report from a member of the Amigo Net. It said that a mariner aboard the Australian-flagged sailing vessel, the Q-Wave, was disabled and requesting assistance. According to news reports, the sailor reportedly had less than 1 liter of water and no food. The vessel's motor was disabled. It had lost its dinghy. Its communications equipment was unreliable. It had sustained a tear in its mainsail. Coast Guard HC-130 Hercules aircraft from Coast Guard Air Station Barbers Point was launched and located the disabled vessel. The crew dropped emergency supplies, including food, water, and a VHF radio to the disabled sailboat. The Good Samaritan vessel Fifth Wife was in the area, overheard communications with the disabled vessel, and responded to escort it back to Hilo. Looking into space, the launch of the NROL-36 mission carrying several new amateur radio microsatellites has once again been postponed, according to Spaceflight Now. The United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket, its classified payload, and the ham radio CubeSats remain poised for liftoff at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. Now officials say that the twice-delayed launch will likely take place September 6th. The latest developments on this pending launch can be followed at spaceflightnow.com. Mark, September 4th is the day that getting your vanity call sign will go up to $15 for a full 10-year term. We told you about this earlier on August 3rd. The previously approved increase of 80 cents was printed in the Federal Register. The new charge takes effect 30 days after publication, and that makes September 4th the first day that it's in effect. And finally this week, I think we've touched on this before, the story of Morse code on Mars. When the Mars rover Curiosity moves around the red planet, it leaves a series of dots and dashes on the surface. Now, these dots and dashes are part of Curiosity's wheels, and they're made by square and rectangular imprints on the rover's treads. And according to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory's Mars rover mechanical engineering team, the holes, or imprints, actually have a purpose as odometer markers. JPL engineers are looking at the tread marks to verify that Curiosity has traversed the distance it expects it to. So what pattern did JPL choose to put on Curiosity's wheels? The holes are in a pattern of short squares and longer rectangles. It's Morse code. And what does it spell out in CW? JPL. The story of this Morse code on Mars is online at the URL you can find in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report, and you can follow Curiosity on Facebook. And that page is facebook.com/MarsCuriosity. Mars Curiosity, all one word. That'll do it from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting here at www.arnewsline.org. Don Wilbanks here, 73, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And getting back to Huntsville for a sec, had a great time with Erin King, AK4JG, and her family and friends and all of her supporters and a couple of previous winners of the Young Ham of the Year Award. And I haven't missed Huntsville since 1995 and hopefully never will miss it. That's just, it's a great ham fest. Bob, back to you.
Well, we appreciate you bringing the news to us, and especially that last bit with Morse code on Mars. My goodness. But I thank you personally for taking the Young Ham of the Year award and presenting it to the Ham Fest in Huntsville. I imagine that was a big deal and for you, probably the best thing that happened in Huntsville for you and your wife, right?
Yeah, pretty close. It's something that, like I said, I've looked forward to. I started going to Huntsville in 1995, which is the year that I became a ham and the year that I got involved with Amateur Radio Newsline. So it's all been a parallel journey. And the Young Ham of the Year Award, whether I'm presenting it or whether, you know, Bill Pasternak is presenting it, is the reason that I go. Because, you know, I mentioned this on Ted Randall's QSO show, radio show. There are a lot of really, really good kids, young adults, you know, 17, 18 years old. And there are a few bad apples in every crate. But it seems like the bad apples always get all of the press. You never hear the good stuff because bad news, of course, sells. Good news doesn't. But if the Young Ham of the Year Award is any indication of the kind of quality young people that we have, I think that our world is in pretty good hands indeed. So I'm not worried about our future at all.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of things going on. People that have children in high school should look a little further because there's a lot of scholarships available for amateur radio operators. And she's really something. She's going to MIT, is that right?
Yeah, she is. She was at MIT and then came back to go to a space camp for the week leading up to Huntsville. That was part of her prize from Yaesu. Yaesu gave her a radio. CQ Magazine gave her the trip to a space camp, and you, of course, helped her out with a nice I believe it was the new headphones for her radio that Yaesu gave her. And so she's probably on her way back up to MIT now. I would assume she's getting geared up for that, and she's got a huge bright future ahead of her. And I'm so proud of her. I really am. She's a sweetheart, and her whole family. I didn't get to meet her mom because her mom was home with her brothers, but her dad is just a quality guy, and I'm looking forward to cultivating a nice friendship with that family. They're a bunch of great people.
Right. Well, that's great. And I appreciate you taking over. You did a great job as an MC. Next year, we're going to take a PA system that everybody can hear you better. Oh, my goodness. That thing was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, whoa. The house sound is not that good in the Von Braun Center, sadly. I don't think it's really set up for that. But we try to do the best we can with what we're given to work with. I think a nice high microphone might help out. I think that would help out.
Yeah,
nice
that did help. But what we're going to do, we're going to drag some JBL Eons in there next year. That'll be good.
There we go.
That's great. Well, thanks so much, Don. And
thank you.
Thinking about things here, Gordon, we received a really sad thing today that George Viveras Sotis, who is one of the VPs and has been for years at HRO at their executive offices, passed away. And we really are going to miss George. I know you were good friends with George. Not a lot of hams maybe had total contact with him because he was more in the ordering department, but I know some of them have. And we really are praying for his family because it's a rough time. I think there's a picture here that we have of George and his two lovely daughters and wife. And it's just really sad that we have to lose people like George. And we wish his family the best going through these very tough times. And I wanted to make sure that we brought that to light. So thanks a lot for showing that to Alex. That's great. Well, on a good note, we're going to take off and go see what happens with the smoke and solder. They've had it boiling for a while, and it's no telling. He got together with a kit builder. So, George, take her away. What's going on in the new building?
Okay, Bob. You were showing those coaxial relays a moment ago. I picked up a couple there at a good price while I was at the Ham Fest. And those are going to be used on a 1,000-watt, 6-meter amp project I'm working on. But that's a little ways down the road. I should have everything I need for that now. Next week, we're actually going to burn some solder in here. This week, we're going to talk again because I ran across Don and my and your Bob and probably Gordo as well, our good friend Joe Eisenberg. And we sat down and had a little chat at the Hamfest, and I've got the video here. I ran into Joe Eisenberg here, KZNEB. Hello, Joe.
Hi, good to see you, George.
Good to see you. What brings you to Huntsville?
Well, this is my 12th time to the Huntsville Ham Fest, and I just enjoy it. They call it the world's friendliest ham fest, and it is. In fact, it's so friendly, I won a door prize.
Yeah, I saw that, an ID-880H ICOM D-Star rig. That is nice.
That looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I only have a D-Star handheld at home, so this is going to be a great addition.
I see you have a CQ shirt on. Some of our viewers probably recognize you or recognize the name or call. What do you do with CQ?
Well, I'm the kit building editor, so I have a monthly column in CQ, and we're approaching my third year as a columnist, completing our third year. And I write about the world of kit building, and I talk about all the kits that there are to build and which ones are good for beginners and so forth, and I introduce new kits. And I teach a lot of techniques, how to handle the electronic components, because there's nobody out there that really teaches that. I've kind of taken that on myself, and I teach people how to bend the resistor leads and the capacitors and the right way to place components on a circuit board so that they have the best chance of success. Because if you've got a kit builder that has never built something and then they fail, they're less likely to ever try it again. Because they'll feel like they wasted their time and money on it. But I teach them the way to do it right. And then if they succeed the first time, they're going to be building more kits. And the more kit builders we have, the more new kits we get.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I'm big on building myself. And it's a lot of fun. And like Joe says, if at first you don't succeed, go back and try again. You'll find where you put that wrong component or have got a solder bridge or something.
Exactly. And I try and make people not panic. In fact, I have them double-check their boards. I always tell people to double-check their boards first. I have some other hints, especially there are builders that will not build a kit that has a toroid in it. Well, all a toroid is wire wrapped around a donut. Okay, yeah, that donut's kind of small, and it's enameled wire. But if you learn the right way to handle it, you'll get it done right every time.
I'm going to be building a soft rock kit soon with the audience from Smoke and Solder. We're going to give everybody a chance to order them, you know, that wants to build along at home. We're going to take it a stage at a time, build a stage, test it, then move on to the next stage. Do you like to build stuff in that way, or do you just put it all together at once?
It varies. It varies by the kit. Some kits are designed to be built all at once and then tested. Some are designed to be built stage by stage. In fact, I talk about that in my column. It's a common variation in kits where sometimes it has to be built stage by stage, and you don't go beyond that point if it doesn't work because obviously you have an issue. And that saves you putting it all together and maybe causing damage to components that are farther down the line. In the soft rock kit, I don't know which one you're doing, if it's the receiver or the transmitter, transceiver, but the simple receiver has, if I remember right, a couple of surface mount parts and some regular components as well, which is a good teaching tool because the other big bugaboo about kits is every once in a while they'll have surface mount components. Now, some kits like the Elecraft KX1 and the QRP Kits Weber Tribander have a certain number of surface mount parts on the main board that come pre-mounted for you, so you don't have to do that.
Yeah, but how much fun is that?
Well, if it's the real small ones, I wouldn't try those myself. But if it's the larger surface mount parts, any builder should be able to do those quite easily. And I have my techniques that I teach how to do that.
So do you prefer using a tiny tip, or do you like to use a hot air method, or an oven, or what do you use for surface mount?
It actually varies on how many surface mount parts I'm doing. If it's one or two, what I'll do is on one of the two solder pads, I'll put a tiny dab of solder on there, and then I'll take a tweezers and lower the part to it and take the soldering iron to it and just reheat it and get it to tack there. Then I'll fully solder the opposite side that has none on it, and then I'll go back to the original side and reflow it so it looks good and holds good.
So do you ever do hot air?
Yes, I do. I use a solder paste that I get from Cash Olson.
Same place.
And a little syringe, and it's very inexpensive. And I just put the little dabs on the pads. And I have an embossing tool that I got from Hobby Lobby. And I slowly heat it up. And then it's really magic. What's fun about that is you don't have to be real skilled at this. All you got to do is put the paste on the pads and set the part on it, and the paste will hold it in place at least enough for your hot air, and then it turns from a gray to a silver. And when you see it change, it's like magic. Sometimes the part will actually move a little bit because the surface tension in the solder makes the part straighten out, and it looks so good. And then you back the heat away and let it cool off before you move the board. Now, what's neat about that is actually the process by which all your consumer electronics is made today. It's just they've automated the placement of the parts on the board, and then it goes through an oven on a conveyor belt, which heats it up and flows the solder.
Now, there's just so many ways to do things, and I wouldn't be scared of surface mount. The really tiny stuff, yeah, but the larger size surface mount shouldn't scare anyone. I mean, if you got a magnifying glass and a pair of tweezers, you're halfway there.
Yeah, and the thing I use is a fluorescent, called a circle line type magnifier, where the fluorescent tube is outside the lens. The other hint I have for people is when you're dealing with a through-hole board, desoldering is quite an issue. But surprisingly, surface mount is easier to desolder because all you do is you heat it up again and take the tweezers and lift the part off. So it's a lot easier. The other trick that I do when I'm doing surface mount is I make sure that I do it on a cookie sheet that has a lip around it so that the surface mount part does not get lost. And that's really, really important. And so what I'll do is I'll do it on a cookie sheet, but what I'll do is make sure that sheet is absolutely clean. There's no scraps of solder or clipped leads or any trash on it or any other parts, so that when I'm doing surface mount, we know that when something comes loose, it's still there.
Yeah, that's a good tip, too. I usually use a box lid or something like that, because if you drop one of those parts, it's gone.
Yes, and my saying always with through-hole parts is I always try and have a lot of standardized parts. Well, lately I've been able to see every once in a while standardized parts for surface mount in the different sizes. So it always helps to have a few extras.
It sure does, and I haven't started collecting surface mount for my spares. I do have the through-hole stuff. But maybe, you know, it might be some LM386s or 555s or something that would be worth hanging on to.
You bet. But like I said, with the through-hole kits, I usually have a full set of quarter-watt resistors, some eighth-watt resistors, and some half-watts. And then I have a whole variety of different capacitors that I found that are standard values that are always used in kits. Because if I've got a kit that's missing a 0.1 capacitor, that's a real small one that goes on a board, I don't want to have to call the guy up and have him send a penny part through the mail, and it might take 2 or 3 weeks to get it. Instead, I just pull it out of my box. It might look a little different, but as long as the voltage rating is correct, we use it.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, sometimes I'll recycle some parts. The bigger things, the smaller capacitors, resistors, and stuff like that, I just keep new in stock because they're cheap enough. But some of the oddball stuff, when I'm tearing apart an old power supply or something, I'll scavenge, you know, some parts out of there. Do you do that?
Yes, I do. In fact, I use a surface mount technique to get them out of regular boards. I take my heat gun that I use on the surface mount boards to get certain difficult components off of a regular through-hole board. I'll just hold it on there and heat it up and take my needle nose on the other side and just pull the part right out.
That sounds a lot safer than the torch Jimmy was trying to use to do that with.
Yeah, and I also use a vacuum desoldering station, and that helps a lot, too.
Joe sure was nice to talk with there and got me excited about building some stuff. So we're going to build some things here on Smoke and Solder that you can follow along at home and build. The first project I'm going to build, and this starts next week, so you need to get yours ordered soon if you're going to build along. And that's this open beacon. It's a 30-meter beacon kit that does multiple modes. You hook it to a computer to program it. Then you disconnect it, and it operates standalone. You can get this at etherkit.com. Now, this may take several weeks to put together because we're going to follow the instructions, and Try to make things plain enough that you'll be able to follow along at home if you've never built anything before. The next thing we're going to build is this project that should be a little bit simpler. This is a 4-to-1 current balun kit from MFJ Enterprises. They put together just specially for smoke and solder fans here who want to build along at home. It's MFJ model number 913K, and you can learn more about that at mfjenterprises.com. And then the next thing I'm going to build, and I'm not sure when this one will start just yet, and this is the SoftRock RX-TX Ensemble. It's a little multiband software-defined radio. It's it does have some surface mount components in it. There's a good many parts in this one, but it's something you can do. You just got to take your time. We'll show you how to wind the toroids and all that stuff on the show here. So you should be able to construct this. Now, this is maybe not a first-time kit builder's kit here, but if you've got just a little experience soldering, you may be ready for that one. So that's what's coming up. If you're interested in the SoftRock, you can find that at 5-dash, that's FiveDash.com. Now, we've got a lot of stuff to give away here, and I'm going to try to get through this as quick as we can. First, the contest that Leo mentioned earlier during the ICOM ad. They're not giving away IC7000s on that website contest. What they're actually giving away there is free ICOM swag like hats, shirts, band charts, just miscellaneous stuff. And they're giving away three different prizes to three winners every week. So if you're interested in that, it doesn't cost anything to enter. Just go to icomamerica.com/en/hamnation and enter. And it's a new contest every week. Now, the big contest we've got going on that is giving away the IC7000, this nice little radio right here behind me, is one that we're running through Facebook. If you'd like to get in on that one, what you need to do is post a picture of your mobile installation at the Smoke and Solder Facebook group, create an album, post your photos there, and then we've got 1 week left to go. The 29th is the last day that you can enter your photos on there, and we encourage everyone, whether you enter or not, to go to the page and sign up. We'll approve you as quick as we can, and you can go on and like the different photos you see there, or actually like the album. That's what we'll be counting the votes on. And then we'll have a final round after we've made the determination on who's ahead. Now, you can learn more about this by clicking the About tab on the Smoke and Solder Facebook group. And for our normal weekly contest, this week we're giving away this great Diamond X500 VHF UHF antenna. It's going to make someone a nice base station. It's not that tall for a high-gain antenna. And I asked the question last week, just what is the gain of that antenna? And Brian, KI6ERR, knew the answer, or at least he looked it up on the internet, and it's 4.5 dB gain on 2 meters and 7.2 dB gain on 70 centimeters. So congratulations, Brian. We'll be shipping this brand-new ICOM X50 antenna out to you this week. So, Bob, that's all we've got here on the old soldering iron stack this week.
You're going to be busy for a long time, aren't you?
I am.
Oh, good. Well, we'll be right behind you. And as I said, I'm going to answer a lot of people's requests that I've been getting for so long to see what's going on, because we're not even started in this situation of a station. But we'll show you what we got going so far. I did get my 870 in here, and that's working extremely well. And, of course, what you're seeing lit up behind me, the 1960 Harvey Wells and the 1963 good old Mosley. You thought they just built antennas, but that's great. We'll be getting into some of that for sure. Gordon, are you guys you about ready to fire up some things on 7268 out there?
We are. In fact, we're tuned on to frequency right now, and maybe Mike will say hi to us. I want to thank everybody for watching Ham Nation tonight.
Hello, Ham Nation viewers. watching live on Twitch.
There he is.
This is Whiskey Tango 6 Hotel.
So join us, Sean.
268.
7268. Back to you, Bob.
California, the garlic capital of the world.
7-3, everybody. We're going to fire up our stuff here and close the old Viasat satellite down for just a little bit. They've been the ones that bring our internet service to you. We're so happy to have that high-speed satellite, finally. So there we go. And Bill's going to be on 14268. So we'll get that going. And down on 3847, you'll see, I don't think Cheryl will be there tonight, but there'll be a bunch of guys there too. So 3847, 7268. 1468. So away we go. 7-3, everyone. We'll see you next week right here on good old Ham Nation.